How many times have you wished you could be in two places at once? With Wix, you practically can. Wix's website builder is packed with powerful AI tools to make running your business online easier. Build a full site just by talking with AI. Get an AI agent to manage your sales and marketing. Or work like a 10-person team, even if it's just you. So you don't need superpowers to get everything done. You just need Wix. Try it now for free at wix.com.
CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Chevron case from the 20th century. It's before us again, before the Supreme Court, in instances that recommend resolution of a tension that I learned from an amicus brief that Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution has provided for me. The choices are this. It might be oversimplistic, but I'm an amateur at this, so I do the best I can. Chevron is about the separation of powers question. And in one instance, Congress over-delegates to administrative agencies, the executive. In the other instance, those administrative agencies, the executive, overreach. We go back and forth. What is an example of this? During the recent pandemic horror stories, the attempt by the administration, the executive branch, to put a moratorium on rents, for example, or to mandate vaccinations, for example, or the Clean Air Act to change the way electricity is generated in the country. That is regarded as overreach, and the Chevron story is at the center of it. Professor, a very good evening to you. Beg pardon for misstating any of this. You will help me understand. I've read the amicus brief. Good evening to you.
Okay, as usual, I think it's probably useful to take a bit of history before you get to Chevron. It was a 1984 decision, and the seeds of this problem start basically at the New Deal, because the New Deal was the first time in which we had the creation of large numbers of alphabet agencies, each of which have enormous powers. And so we have the SEC on the one hand, and so we have the Federal Trade Commission, and so forth. And we have the Department of Labor. And so the first case on Chevron is a case called Skidmore, which was decided in 1944. And what they were trying to do was to figure out how you apply the overtime rules for time and a half to people who had very odd jobs. The general rule in administrative law, and Chevron's an illustration of this as well, is the conscientious administrator tries to handle the typical case and doesn't worry about the 1% or 2% cases on the side. But if you're talking about 100 million people in a workforce, 1% or 2% is a couple of million people, so something's going to come up. And they had to figure out when somebody was not working but was sitting in a waiting room in case an emergency came, did you pay them overtime or did you pay them nothing? And they couldn't figure out what to do. And so they decided to defer to the agency as a sign of respect. And what happened in that particular case is there was a basic incoherence in the statute, which assumed that overtime work was always more onerous than it was, whereas in this case, it was far less onerous than it was unless you were called up. And they defer. And so immediately you're in this cockeyed universe in which things that make no sense whatsoever get papered over because the statute's imperfect and the administrators have to make some sort of decision. And the judge, in that case, Robert Jackson, a great judge, did not want to intervene. Chevron was that kind of a case. And what happened was they were trying to figure out how to regulate smokestacks and emissions from various pipes. And when the court was down below, Ruth Ginsburg, who was that time on the Court of Appeals, what she said is, I'm going to invalidate this particular regulation because there's one thing it doesn't do right. And so this was a case of really very strong judicial oversight with respect to administrative agencies, which is as much of a problem in its own way as lax oversight with respect to the agency. So it goes to the Supreme Court and it comes to Judge John Paul Stevens, and he's the man in the middle. He's a very moderate guy. And he reads what Ruth Ginsburg wrote. And he says, this can't be right. But what he doesn't do is to say, look, here's a statute. It's kind of tricky. I'm going to try to figure out what it means when it talks about a point source. Does it mean a facility or does it mean a smokestack? And you have to decide that question. But he doesn't do that. He said, this is a really hard question. So I'm going to let the agency decide whether it's a smokestack on the one hand or an entire facility on the other, unless the statute itself is unambiguous. Now, the next thing you immediately realize, the term unambiguous is itself ambiguous, and there's huge sorts of tests as to what this means. So we get this endless battle coming out. Is the statute clear so we don't apply deference, or is the statute unclear so that we do apply deference? And that's, I think, is just a wrong way to think about everything, which is why I hope I signed that brief, which says get rid of it. What the statute says is questions of law resolved by courts. If you did not have an administrative agency and you had a question of law and it was close, you do your best judgment to get it right. And sometimes you get it wrong, but more often than not, you would get it right. What they do is they say, if the case comes out of administrative agencies, the judges defer on questions of law to the people who do it. And that's exactly the wrong result, because administrative agencies have hobby horses. They're appointed by political parties, and they're often on one side of an issue or another. And the last thing you want to do on a question of law that's going to survive this particular administration is to defer to what they do. And so, as I always like to put the point, if they're so right in what they say, they don't need any deference. They just make the winning argument, and the court will follow them. But almost always when you start getting with Chevron deference, it's the bad arguments that prevail, and it turns out that the courts won't overturn them. This then creates a lot of uneasiness in the economy at large and a real sense that somebody's sort of not doing their particular job. And this Loper case that you, which was the source of our brief before the Supreme Court, is a classic illustration of just how this process breaks down. Not talking about the details, the district court said the statute is clear and the government can do what it wants. And then when you get to the Court of Appeals, one guy says, oh, the statute's clear. The government can't do what it wants. And the other guy say, we don't know what's right or wrong, so we'll let the agency have its way. Well, if you have a doctrine in the 21st century that allows you to say yes, no, or maybe with perfect confidence, there's something deeply wrong with what's going on. And so the argument that people are starting to make is, well, we really want Congress to take over this business. We don't want the agencies to have that kind of deference. And it turns out if they make a mistake, we want the courts to rule on this thing as a matter of law. And so there's too little congressional oversight and there's too little judicial oversight. In between, agencies start to do much too much. And there is then what they call the democratic difficulty. These are unappointed people, are unelected people. They're not accountable to anybody. Oversight by Congress is very fragile. Because the Congress that enacted the particular statute is no longer around. And 10 years later, the current Congress may have a very different view from the original one. So you get yourself an interpretive mess. So the position that I wanted to take, and I think my co-authors wanted to take, is very kind of simple. We have a way of deciding legal questions when there's no administrative agency. And we use that same particular method of deciding cases when we do have an administrative agency. And we don't play around with these permutations and definitions. What we do is we try to decide. There's a doctrine known as the major questions doctrine, which was very active in the West Virginia case, in which it turned out that Chief Justice Roberts said, if it's a really big deal, I'm going to give an honest interpretation of the statute. I'm not going to defer to the agency. Well, how do we know what's a big question and what's a small question? In the Loper case, there was a small administrative guard who said, oh, we have to put people on fishing boats to make sure that they don't overcatch. And we used to just demand space from the boat, but we're running out of money. So we want the boats to pay for the inspectors to come on board so we don't have to get a congressional appropriation. So is this a two-bit issue involving a bunch of small boats? Or is it a major question involving the way in which appropriations are made?
And I want to go to the over-delegation part, Richard. You've mentioned this. Congress is as much at fault as the administrative agency, because Congress avoids these questions, and Congress is directly answerable to the American people. The courts are not. Therefore, there is a failure here in the way Congress deports itself. It's a partisan food fight and not a seeking of the truth.
Well, that's half true. And there's many cases in which you do have that. They duck. Oftentimes it's on issues of immense importance. Like Congress did not want to take a stand on the Iraqi war. And they said, oh, Mr. Bush, you do what you think is best. And if you're right, we'll praise you.
Does it want to take a stance on the biggest issue right now, which is immigration. It ducks the story.
Yeah, they duck with it. But on the other hand, John, statutes are a completely variable amount. And some of the most famous cases of administrative law are cases of perfectly clear statutes that are tortured and butchered by the administrative agency. So there is a statute in a case called Sackett involving the waters of the United States, including the navigable, the territorial seas.
Yes.
And what happens is these administrators find some guy who owns a plot of land 600 feet from the nearest body of water. It's covered with dirt and gravel and weeds and everything else. And the guy says, I'm going to build a house here. And they said, no, you're not. This is part of the navigable waters of the United States. Because what happens on this land could influence what goes on in the navigable waters of the United States. Comment, one case in a billion. And so for 20 years, they stopped this thing from going on. This is not a case of a bad statute. The statute was very good and was very clearly drafted. It turned out that everybody on the Supreme Court managed to misread it. I think in saying that it gave much more power to the agencies than it did. But if you're trying to figure out what an analogy is to a territorial sea, it's not a piece of dry land, right? It may be a tiny little river that could be navigable. And the famous 1869 case, I love this case, is there was a river that was navigable. Why was that? Because you could float logs down that river from the top of the mountain where they were harvested to the bottom. So even though no boat could go on that river, if you allowed every landowner to block it, you'd never get to use the river. So they had the right result. So that's a complete case of administrative wildness and a good statute. So here you have the problem. We have terrible statutes that are read in bad ways. We have good statutes that are read in bad ways. Sometimes you even get bad statutes that are read in a good way. And so the level of variation that you start to have is really nuts. And as I said before,
What is your opinion of where this is going before the court? We now have a conservative majority on the court. Will they qualify Chevron and at least to limit the overreach of the agencies?
I think they're going to overrule it, actually, and I think they're right.
I see. Not even qualify it. They're going to, and then you have
it. It just does not work. Every problem you mentioned is true. The problem is none of them are exclusive. They're multiple problems, and they're all cut in different ways. And the only way to try to handle this is to treat an administrative agency as though it's a kind of a trial.
And is stare decisis an issue here? Will it be part of
it? Well, it won't be a serious issue, I think, because there are no reliance issues on this. That a stare decisis really becomes an important situation when people build up entire institutions, which you're going to have to rip down. And so one of the illustrations of that is another constitutional doctrine, an oxymoron called the Article One Court. It says all judicial power shall be invested in Article Three. And Article Three gives lifetime tenure to judges.
Right.
And then what happens is you get an agency that kind of morphs into a court and it decides custom cases. And it's been doing it for 50 years and nobody makes the slightest bit of protest. And then the Supreme Court has to hear a case involving a giant fraud on the customs hound. And the issue is, do you completely invalidate a court that's been running since 1810 and 1856? Or do you say, we have it? Well, they decided not to invalidate it because they didn't want to make all of its decisions nullified. And then they have to say, well, can you do this for anything? And the answer is no. Well, what can you do it for? Well, for public rights. Well, what does that mean? They thought it meant tax disputes involving the customs office. But by the time we get to the modern cases, Justice Thomas, in a simply dreadful opinion, starts saying if anything is decided by a statute, it can go to an Article One court, which is crazy.
So your opinion is that the Chevron case will be struck down?
I think what's going to happen, I think they've had enough of this.
Right.
Is too much craziness, too much silliness, too much abuse of power. What happens is you get what we call the Chevron flip-flop. I'll end on this note. I come in and I say that this statute basically requires that you have certain buffers on your automobile. The next administration comes in and they say, no, it doesn't require it. If you give deference to radically inconsistent decisions, can both be correct. And you're trying to run a business to comply with the law. The business needs a 10-year horizon, and you can get three administrative shifts in that period. This is simply unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. What we ought to do is treat cases of law that arise out of administrative disputes as though they were cases of law coming from any ordinary court.
Six to three against Chevron? Is that your prediction?
I don't even know. But Kagan, I think probably that's right. Kagan is sometimes whiffy on this, but she wrote a perfectly dreadful opinion in the Gundy case, which was a situation where there was no reason whatsoever to allow deference. And she sort of said, I don't want to wreck the entire administrative state. So I would guess 6-3.
We need to move to the decision by the Fifth Circuit at least so far, opposed by the Biden administration, about in order to investigate these coordination between the U.S. government and certain social media platforms during the late pandemic. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.